This reading in the Midnight Library is dedicated with great love to our beautiful friend and patron, Michelle. She radiated kindness, warmth, and love. We wish we could have had more time with her, and we will never forget her. Thank you for everything, our dear spooky lovely, Michelle. The following is intended for bizarre audiences only. Welcome to the Midnight Library.
Madam, something must be done about Irma.
Well, she won't be old enough for demon kindergarten for another century or so. And her potty training is being planned.
I make reference to her horns, madam. They're protruding under the hood of her bunny suit.
Oh, I knew this day would come.
Grinding wheel?
I'm afraid so. I believe Stefan has one. You know we'll have to catch her first and hold her down.
I'm thinking some manner of blow dart might be in order.
Excellent idea, darling. I'll find Stefan. Not so very long ago, on a warm fall evening, Miranda Merrick silently made her way along the leaf-littered path that meandered through the village cemetery. It was the only stroll within the town she truly enjoyed. She paused every so often to read the centuries-old scrolling headstones with the names of people she'd heard stories about when she was a child. The lowering orange sun kissed the weathered stones, giving them a soft peach-tinted glow, making the stones themselves seem, somehow, alive. She could remember the cunning and treacherous stories about the long dead, but she could not recall the start of her day. As she gazed up at a great spire-shaped gravestone, Father Lutzen crept up beside her and rested his hand on her forearm, saying,
"Are you all right, my dear?"
The fetching clergyman was unprepared for the piercing darts her ebony eyes shot at him, and he immediately withdrew his heavy hand. This was only the second time he'd ever spoken to her, the first being several years ago, when she sharply handed back a church flyer he attempted to force into her hand at a town gathering. And he had never, ever touched her. Until now.
"My apologies, Miss Merrick,"
he quickly stated, staring straight at her, while her unblinking eyes burned into his.
"Seeing you here, all alone, I wondered if you might be lonely,"
he mechanically said, with a sly smile and a pert raise of his bushy eyebrows. Instantly perturbed, Miranda snapped, "Have you taken leave of your tiny Bible-bent mind, Father?" She sneered at him, adding, "Or does your master not have the ability to see your lecherous behavior through the trees of the cemetery?" Normally, such a chilling admonishment from the witch was more than enough to send anyone overstepping their boundaries with her scurrying off the other way. But Father Lutzen moved closer to her. No god could blame me. I have always thought you were the most beautiful woman, the most beautiful witch. My mind is filled with only you. If I could only...
Miranda's eyes narrowed as she stood her pointer finger upright in front of the priest's mouth to silence him. Her spell came forth. Remove mine image from thy mind, my voice and name no longer find. This day forth and all the others, search for me and find thy mother. She exacted the spell with a swish of her finger near his staring face. But the priest stepped closer to her and returned his hand to her forearm.
I can't forget you,
he robotically said.
We can't.
Many male voices said, as a single priest stepped from behind each and every tombstone. In unison, they began walking toward her. Miranda quickly turned and hurried back onto the path that looped around the oldest graves as the throng of priests hastened their pace. She began to run as their footfalls sped and gained in closeness to her. Her heart raced as she levitated off the ground. In her muddled mind, a confident, unfamiliar voice came clearly.
Daughter of witches, have faith. I will guide thee.
Now high above a rowan tree, Miranda looked down and spied a broken branch, and drew it to her open hand. The milling priests below stood watching as the target of their lust rocketed away on the slim and sturdy branch. Her maid, Della, promptly threw open the leaded glass doors of the third floor balcony and ushered her mistress in with a caring wave of her arms. The witch eased the makeshift broom to an abrupt, smooth halt in the middle of the lush and darkened bedroom. Thankful to be safe, she turned to address her maid, and saw only herself, lying on her stately canopied bed. She saw herself, half mad in a cold sweat, her eyes pinched shut, unable to wake from the vision of the pursuing priests. Miranda gently touched her sleeping self on her forearm. Instantly, her eyes flew open to barely witness the ghost image of her dream self fading away.
Good afternoon, madam.
John Darling warmly spoke, glancing up from his daily reading of the village obituaries, many of which he had written. The man-wolf did a second wide-eyed look at his companion, noticing how frazzled she looked. You needn't say it, Miranda quickly declared. Yes, I've had that same dream again, or some version of it. And no, I don't care to talk about what it means.
You'll get no prodding from me, madam,
Darling glibly replied as he sipped his tea and let his soulful eyes drift toward the stack of letters that had been neatly placed beside the witch's breakfast cake. Miranda sighed and took her seat at the table. At the same time, deep in Phantom Forest, bright orange bubbles floated up from the depths of a corner of the underworld. The tiny bubbles traveled up into the wet roots of a bed of red ferns. that immediately laid themselves over against the roots and trunk of a massive oak tree. The ferns passed the tiny bubbles under the bark of the tree. The message of the bubbles entered the sap. The mighty tree quivered inside as it gave up its pulp and fibers that gathered into paper, upon which the sap spelled out the message sent from the underworld. Steerpike picked up the scent as he flew and dove down to alight within the tree. As she sat picking at her noon breakfast, the witch sliced open her mail with a sharp fingernail. There were 6 letters in total. 2 were anonymous hate mail notes from villagers who were too afraid to visit the library, but decided to deride it anyway. If she touched the ink, Miranda could easily see the writer's face in her mind's eye. The 3rd piece of mail was a thank you note from a fan and visitor to the library. They expressed their gratitude to Miranda for clearing their workspace of a single annoying coworker, although they had no idea just how she accomplished this. The other 3 letters were superb. All were a warm shade of ecru, impeccably addressed in an ancient cuneiform hand, in rich sepia-colored, oak-scented ink. All 3 letters said exactly what they had been saying for the last 2 months. Miranda Merrick, you have an appointment in the underworld, level 6, urgency, level 2. The witch took a breath and closed her eyes a moment. Just then, the tonal doorbell rang, and a pretty maid hurried by and shook her head at John Darling, assuring him that he needn't leave his breakfast to tend to the door. When she opened it, there on the veranda stood Lydia, the library's goth postal girl, wearing very dark sunglasses. "Hey, Martha," she coolly spoke. "Steerpike just gave me this on my way back, so I thought I'd turn around and get it here." The dark library confidant had just delivered the other 6 letters only a half hour earlier. The maid walked haltingly toward the breakfast table with the new oak letter trembling in her hand. "Oh, it's all right, Martha dear. Just add it to the side table," Miranda calmly said. The maid gently set the new letter on top of a sliding heap of matching letters that covered the low ornate table and quickly left the room. Darling dunked a bone biscuit in his tea and sympathetically said,
"Perhaps I could escort you, madam."
Setting her cup down, Miranda half smiled, then frowned. "Oh, you are wonderful, darling. I'll keep your offer in mind when the time comes," she said with a shrug.
"I fear that may be sooner than you think, madam,"
Darling emphatically said, nodding his head toward the side table behind her. Miranda followed his cue over her shoulder, just in time to see the newly delivered letter smoldering, then glowing into a flame. At 6 p.m. on a sunny afternoon, the mistress of the library and her man-wolf companion gave their sparse service of housemaids and footmen their instructions on keeping the library in lockdown mode whilst they were away. The mail was to be accepted, but anyone from the village was to find the front gate locked, and the library was to appear closed. The tall windows shuttered. As the pair walked, several goons set off following the witch and the wolf in an effort to protect them, but the witch sent them back to their posts, where they blended in, unnoticed by any outsiders. Miranda brought only a small velvet case and a favorite broom that was held in place diagonally across her back by a leather loop that was an integral part of her vest. Darling chose to leave the library in wolf form, claiming it was convenient to begin a journey on four legs and later to switch to two. As they entered Phantom Forest, each were remembering the first time they journeyed as adults through a different part of the woods, so many years ago. It was a happy memory for them both.
"I thought we'd need only a handbasket,"
Darling joked, and broke the silence as they walked toward the enchanting tunnel of trees. And Miranda smiled.
"Is it going to be completely awful, madam?"
Darling asked, being cautious of their destination.
"The underworld?"
"Well, generally, yes. But this part, not so much. I believe we're only going to the sixth level. It's where all the business of witches in service is directed."
And membership does have its privileges,
I hope," she gingerly replied. The traveling pair stepped into the charming holloway of mature trees. It was sunnier than the dimming forest and filled with birdsong, butterflies, and sweetly scented spring flowers.
"Madam,"
Darling began after only a few minutes,
"if it's not too prying to ask, what do they want? Are you to sign some contract or agree to recruit new witches?"
he asked, tilting his head, looking genuinely puzzled. Miranda paused, addressing Darling directly in his beautiful wolf eyes. She laughed and said,
"What do they want?"
"They want me to have a baby." Darling's long jaw dropped open, and he morphed into his human form in an instant. He adjusted his top hat and tentatively reached into his suit coat to check his pocket watch. The bucolic walkway of tunneled trees sloped downward momentarily, terminating into six nearly identical tree-lined pathways. Miranda lifted a prism-cut gemstone of labradorite, suspended by a long chain from her chatelaine, and raised it in front of each of the pathways. When held in front of the entrance of the third path, the stone gave off a sudden twinkle of iridescence, and the pair stepped forth onto the new trail. As they strolled, the witch and the man-wolf talked of their plans for the library, Darling stating that he thought the place felt a little empty, in spite of all the spirits and new guests arriving. And the new sunny aisle became thick with stately pines. Several deer, shadowy figures, and birds and insects retreated as the pair walked along. Deeper inside the grove, the large plot of trees softly vibrated with a low and sullen chant. The way ahead was devoid of any beings and was flanked by large angular boulders that seemed to further conduct the hum of the low chant. Having never been to this spanse of the forest, Darling declared,
"I must say, madam, I didn't realize your powers had this extent. It's very impressive.
The witch glanced up at him as they moved through the walls of stone, saying, I don't. This is familial magic that's rooted here, darling. This place likely looks differently to everyone who passes through it, if they can get to it at all. Darling simply replied with an astounded, Ha! The huge stone walls now narrowed some, and were now covered with giant slabs of rock overhead, giving a singular tunnel-like walkway for the two to pass through. A bright lavender evening light with a brilliant vermilion sun marked the end of the stone passageway. Only when they left the structure and turned to view it was it clear that it resembled an ancient dolmen. The tomb-like exit emptied them out onto a glistening pebble beach with lapping waves. To one side, a rambling crescent of rocky land swept far out into the water. The curving isthmus was crowded with a proud crop of the tall pines that dramatically silhouetted against the pale purple sky. Darling exhaled deeply, as if to say, now what? Miranda lifted her brows and nodded toward the dark crescent of trees, slowly bisecting the body of the darkened trees. The flying jib of the Mystique glided into view. The wooden hull and tall masts of the valiant clipper ship were also in silhouette, but the setting sun of bright red had transformed each of its pasty canvas sails into a glowing fuchsia painting. The witch and the man-wolf were collected by a small mahogany rowboat, with a crew of two shipmen who did not speak, even when spoken to. Miranda exchanged a curious glance with Darling as the ferrying boat quickly arrived alongside the ship to receive its attached gangway. Miranda immediately felt much more assured when Captain Magnus appeared at the quarterdeck to greet her and Darling. Magnus, imposing and gallant in full captain's regalia, bowed gracefully and swept his tricorn hat over his heart, but lifted his head with a dire expression on his sea-worn face. The crewmen stood eerily stock still around the deck. Merrick and Darling both looked cautiously around the ship. Down from the foremast leapt a hulking creature, his clawed feet crashing to the deck with a loud crack. Darling flinched, but Miranda only let her eyes close slowly and then open again, inhaling deeply, taking in the sight of him. With reptilian-like plated skin, mighty obsidian horns, emerald eyes, and a strikingly handsome face, this was the demon Galu. Miranda had seen numerous depictions of him in the library grimoires. Several paintings that hung in the gallery room featured him. He was often seen presiding over some gruesome happening. The demon leaned in and wagged his forefinger in a tick-tock motion at John Darling, then seemingly commanded the movement of the man-wolf's feet with his swirling finger, turning him around and walking him back down the gangway and back onto the black rowboat below. Miranda glared at Galu. Galu glared back. And Miranda blinked. For the entire short journey, every happening on board the great ship was directed by Galu. The crewmen worked in silence, obeying his unspoken orders. Magnus manned the helm, but could only watch the wheel spin as Galu, resting in a hammock, steered the ship with a tilt of his horned head. The sea was calm, but Galu sent the sails billowing, with curt puffs of breath from his patinaed lips. When night fell, Magnus offered his arm to Miranda to usher her to the special guest quarters he'd had made up for her. Galu caused Magnus to enter the pretty cabin instead, and shepherded Miranda to the captain's suite and closed her inside. Through the night, the demon positioned himself in the narrow hallway, with his back to the door, as the witch slept. Her dreamless sleep featured the presence of an unknown energy, feminine and contentious. The pre-dawn morning brought the bedeviled ship coasting to a stop in a blind harbor buried in thick smog. The Mystique sat anchored impossibly close to the landing of a dark floating dock that poked out of the smog, hanging heavily in the air. With a point of his finger, Galu calmed both the shifting water and the tilting dock. The silent demon stood at the top of the lowered gangplank. As Miranda stepped past him, he manifested from nowhere a black, web-like cape that gently floated down upon her as she descended the dock, the sullen garment giving her the appearance of a doomed bride. The fine lace of the hood overhung her brow, framing her serious face. Magnus, full of concern, stepped forward to follow her, and Galu shoved him backwards without touching him. The demon then followed the witch down the railed plank into the gray haze, leaving the Mystique and her crew to themselves in the claggy mist. Miranda and Galu made their way through a smoky, pewter-colored landscape, seemingly steeped in perpetual night, and lit only by steaming, glowing quagmires in the near distance. The witch, the demon perceived, was growing weary and suspicious. Galu paused and made a low, whistling sound that escaped his lips in a ribbon of green breath that curled and mingled with the roaming smog. Off to their left, the dirty, cloudy air huffed and rolled in a kind of belch. Cracking, dry hoofballs became louder. A bone horse without a speck of flesh loomed forth and approached them. Miranda sighed and raised her hand to reach for the brittle mare's tattered reins. Galu sharply slapped her hand away, snatching the reins tightly in his clawed hand. The demon hoisted himself up upon the bare-boned horse, and waited as it turned and chose its direction. Now more fearful and tired than she could ever recall being, Miranda was forced to walk beside the corpse steed that carried the devilish rider. The odd three moved along on some manner of rough cobblestones in what might have been, or could still be, a deserted or destroyed hamlet, with crumbling burnt houses, torched trees, and low fires still burning in the landscape. Where the scorched town ended, the scenery gradually transformed from smoggy gray to a nebulous indigo blue. The bone mare emitted a delicate rattling sound that came from where her throat would be. She bobbed her head in a sad and baleful way, refusing to take another step. Galu dismounted and stood peering into the gloomy terrain. Miranda, feeling like a lone stranger in a proverbial strange land, felt, somehow, sorry for the undead horse, and turned to pat it as the demon walked away. As her fingers brushed the mare's skull, the skeletal horse dropped to ashes on the stony road and swirled away on a low and mixing breeze. Rising from the navy blue ground, a soaring, spired Gothic structure with a tremendous pair of arched blackened doors revealed itself in the churning blue haze. The doors eased open as the witch approached them. She turned back to face Galu, and he was gone, standing alone on the threshold, peering through the lace that now drooped and covered her face. Miranda's pulse quickened as she beheld the sight within. Half-dead beings draped in dark, heavy shrouds filled the pews of the sprawling expanse of the tall cathedral, their raw-scraped faces turned to leer at her. Patches of ripped, wet flesh clung to and hung from their damp bones. Great flaming fire beds lined the stone walls to either side. Before these fires, high, rickety racks were draped with remnants of human flesh that crisped as they dried in the rising flames. Waiting at the far end of the center aisle, before the blazing pit of the sanctuary, stood a towering, cowled priest with the head of a pitch-black goat. As Miranda thought of turning away and running back into the unfamiliar land, the weighty doors closed behind her. The grim priest spoke.
Come now, witch, waste not my time.
Miranda froze, her cheeks burned, and the cathedral seemed to inhale and hold its breath. A low female voice arose in her ear. Go forth, daughter. I will guide thee. Miranda walked the length of the solemn aisle, past the multitude of grisly guests. She bravely looked up at the caprine priest, whose height made her look like a child.
Where is thy husband?
The great goat mockingly demanded, as Miranda shook her head and her gaze sunk to the floor. The great beast blew steam from his snout and growled,
I'll get you a volunteer.
All of the bloody half-dead guests stood in unison, hoping to be chosen. No, please, the small witch said, not knowing what else to do. The horned priest fumed with anger and seethed down his words upon her head.
If you refuse to wed a ghoul, I'll let them tear your flesh for my fire.
Miranda winced. Her hot tears fell and sizzled as they touched the stone floor. Tell him. Tell him you won't obey. Tell him you'll do nothing for his pleasure, whispered the voice of her advocate. Miranda, now resigned to her fate, wept as she spat out the defiant words.
I won't. Master, I will not do this. I can't. I will not do this for you.
The looming minister gave a snort of derision and narrowed his soulless eyes.
You must,
the priest shouted.
The prophecy directs, witches beget witches until the final witch enslaves a village.
His scornful words crashed down upon her. Miranda's heart stopped beating. Don't, came a singular word from her invisible counsel. With her energy draining, Miranda shook her head and sunk to her knees before the livid goat, who grew in rage and in stature. Miranda was now sure he would kill her. She slumped over on the hot floor. The sanctuary altar fire flared with a heaving whoosh. Miranda closed her eyes, waiting for her death blow. And Galu stepped forth from the blaze.
I am the husband of this wretched witch who lies to torment your unholiness.
The green demon profoundly lied, adding,
she's more wicked than any. Her own womb rejects her,
he declared, as he lunged at Miranda, grabbing her by her hair, dragging her toward the aisle. The furious towering goat gritted his crooked brown teeth and shouted at the demon.
Galu, you fool! Force your wife to choose her offspring.
Galu pulled Miranda by her hair, back up the wedding aisle, past the putrid ghouls and out of the Gothic church, promptly letting go of her as they rounded the massive cornerstone of the forbidden structure. The exhausted witch staggered to her feet. With her eyes full of tears, she opened her arms to embrace her saving grace, Galu. The demon quickly pulled away, saying,
no, we must obey the master's order.
As the pair walked along, Miranda wondered just who was her advisor. The demon led the witch through the drifting blue gloom to a large and hellish well. The The burnt stone block ring smoked with an acrid funk. Galu gestured for Miranda to enter the well, pointing to the lowering bare stone steps that jutted outward from its wall and spiraled into blackness. The witch hesitated, waiting to see if the silent voice of her advisor would speak. When no guidance came, she stepped down inside the murky well. Down, down, down the stone steps led into an ever-widening space. Torch-lit walls lined the cavernous underbuilding, which remarkably resembled the catacombs and lantern-lit tunnels beneath the Midnight Library. Only here, the arching stone block walls and stony floor were all etched in an ancient language, and a low and steady pulse was just barely perceived. Galu turned away and faced a near wall with an immense relief of a pentagram bedecked with countless demonic faces peering out from it. The tip of his forefinger became a flame, and he lit a row of fat candles before it, illuminating the devilish multitude. As he did this, the wall shifted sideways, revealing a great marbled hall before him. Galu tilted his head at Miranda and followed in closely behind her. Miranda had never seen anything like it. Tall purple pillars were spaced widely throughout the great room. They disappeared into sailing blue clouds above. Between these, intermittent stars could be seen. Before she could take in the entire sight, beautiful, exotic demons came dancing toward her. Their skins were a blend of dark pearlescent colors, their eyes aglow with lust. One by one, they twirled the exhausted witch, waltzing her around and around the pillars. One dancer passing her to another, all seductively holding her and brushing their lips to hers. Each provocative demon elegantly tilted her closer and closer toward great stone fountains like baptismal fonts stationed throughout the palatial hall. Within each stone bath floated a single large egg. Each irresistible demon wantonly willing the spent witch to choose their evil egg. Miranda cried as she danced. All of this was against her will. She had only ever been a mother to animals and odd beasts. She didn't want a baby or a demon. Her spirit was broken. She wished only to hear the voice of her anonymous guide. Seeing that she couldn't make her choice, Galu raised his clawed hand, suddenly halting the churning maelstrom of beseeching demons, leaving Miranda swaying on her tired feet, her bleary eyes darting from egg to mysterious egg. The demon stepped toward the witch and peered down into her eyes. He knew she wasn't alone. With the razor-sharp nail of his middle finger, he scratched the archaic symbol of a crescent and cross upon her fevered brow. Galu softly commanded,
"Demoness, come forth."
Miranda drew a sharp breath in. As she exhaled, her damp breath flowed from her mouth in a falling gray vapor that grew from the floor upward, gathering into a glamorous, gleaming entity. This was Lilith, an ancient female demon, fabled first wife of Adam, centuries-old enemy of women and babies. Now, through the turning of the ages and the twisting of fate, being made to repay an eternity's worth of restitution by protecting, advising, and guarding all witches, women, babies, and unborn demons. All along, Lilith had been Miranda's counsel, and Galu had just brought her forth. The lithe silver demon, more powerful than any present, seized Galu by his throat, lifting his taloned feet easily from the floor.
"Hello, sweetie,"
she snidely greeted him, gruffly forcing him to dance with her as she handled him like a rag doll, and they whirled from egg to egg. Miranda watched in disbelief while the demonic pair strangely glided around the room. In a poetic moment, Lilith stood her partner Galu upright, erectly on his toes, stared into his eyes like she owned him. Then she dramatically dipped him back over off his feet, like a scene in the most romantic film. Galu, for a single moment, closed his eyes in bliss. In that moment, Lilith glanced down at the egg floating in the font behind him and winked at Miranda. On her journey back to the inlet, Miranda carried the chosen egg. It swung, swaddled in one of her many skirts, tucked into the sash of her ancestral garb.
"I don't know how to raise a baby demon,"
the witch bemoaned out loud as she moved along, adding,
"or even what to name one."
Lilith's voice advised her,
"In an instant, you will know."
On board the glorious clipper ship, Miranda dined with Captain Magnus in his rustic but grand cabin.
"Can I tempt you with a baby demon, sir?"
Miranda joked as she ate, still reluctant about the new being. The large, unhatched egg pitched and rolled in a woven basket on the table, with Miranda and Magnus anxiously glancing at it as they talked.
"Well, my dear,"
the captain coyly claimed,
"I don't believe I'm cut out for fatherhood." in this lifetime or any other.
And why is that? Miranda sweetly asked.
Too impatient,
exclaimed Magnus, as he stabbed into the shell of the egg with his dinner fork. Miranda gasped. The large cracked egg lay still in the basket for several seconds. Suddenly, the baby demon inside punched the top half of the eggshell away and shot up out of its shell, doing a flip onto the well-appointed dinner table. Miranda's eyes widened as she beheld the wee imp standing like a warrior beside the bowl of mashed potatoes. The newborn demon bowed its little head, beset with tiny obsidian horns, then snapped its chin up, yelling,
"Hello, mother f-"
"Irma!" Miranda blurted out without thinking. "That is not how we talk at the dinner table or in front of our distinguished host." The willful baby demon blew a loud raspberry, rolled her shiny black eyes, then plopped down and stretched out on her side on the table. She propped her pretty face up on her fist and stared up dreamily at her mother. Miranda rolled her lips in and bit them, trying not to laugh, her eyes welling up with tears. Magnus let out his signature bass laugh, smashing his fists on the table with glee. As the Mystique drifted under the starry sky, on the shimmering deep blue water, Miranda curled up on a tufted velvet lounge chair on the deck of the enchanted ship, watching. Captain Magnus strode proudly about with the mini demon on his shoulder, the brawny man giggling at whatever the tiny hellion whispered into his ear. He let her climb on to the knotted rope of the ship's bell, then doubled over with laughter when she was too light to ring it. He gently pulled her by her tail to help ring the brass bell, then delighted in her joy of hearing it, Miranda smiled. Two young deckhands swung a length of rope, letting the demon jump over it as they sang a bawdy shanty that everyone seemed to know. Two more sailors came up from below deck and unfolded a new mizzen sail, spreading it open on the deck. The wee demon raced over and bounded into the middle of the sail. The two crewmen then grasped the corners of the canvas sail and launched the small devil speedily skyward, sending her flying up to the height of the moon sail of the main mast. In shock, Miranda sprang from her chair with a pain in her heart. She snatched the dropping baby demon out of the air before she could land back on to the billowing sail. In this moment, everything changed. Irma giggled, and the sailors apologized. Miranda, with her heart still aching, untied a sheer black scarf from the sash of her skirt and lovingly wrapped the infant. The demon baby tilted her head and looked at the witch, saying,
"Mama?"
with a hopeful question in her eyes. Miranda's heart glowed. "Yes, baby, I'm your mama," she said with words that were nothing but true. Captain Magnus appeared over Miranda's shoulder and told her that they were nearing the inlet. When he offered to see her and her new baby demon home through the forest, The witch thought for a moment, then said, "Do you know, sir, I think we'll take the scenic route as a treat for little Irma." Miranda picked up her broom from beside the lounge chair and steadied it horizontally and precisely 27 inches off the floor of the great ship's deck. She lovingly gathered Irma up in her arms and held her tightly as she sat down upon the broom. The crewmen lined up with their chins lifted and their hands respectfully behind their backs. Magnus kissed the witch sweetly on her cheek, then made a silly face at Irma, who giggled back at him. Lightly and gently, the broom lifted the new mother and her new baby up and away, over the splendid nighttime sea, carrying them toward the shore. Irma took no notice of the twinkling stars or the magical scenery below. She only gazed up at her mother and touched her face softly with her chubby little hand. Miranda's heart melted. As they sailed over Phantom Forest toward home, she drew her baby to her, cradling her. She whispered down, "Irma, you are my baby." Tears of joy rolled down her cheeks. Irma, the baby demon, cooed up at Miranda and whispered,
"Mama, you're in for so much trouble."
The witch flew her newborn baby demon home to the Midnight Library, where she became the light of the household, the apple of everyone's eye, the song in her mother's heart, and somewhat of a baneful delight to everyone who visited.
"Again!"
"Irma, you must go to sleep now. You've heard this story a million times." "Good night, baby."
"Good night, Mama."
"Madam, I distinctly recall you telling a different version of this story in the Broom and Fang."
"Did I?"
"Yes. You said you were allergic to eggs, but the demons forced you to take one anyway. And then you sneezed on it, fertilizing it."
"Oh, yes. I remember." "That was in an alternative timeline, darling. You know we all just keep repeating variations of our lives over and over again."
"You know it frightens me when you talk like this. Please say it isn't so."
"Good night, John, darling."
"Madam, you never call me John. Madam, which timeline is this?"
This special reading in the Midnight Library was brought to you by me, Miranda Merrick. It was presented to our fabulous patrons early and ad-free. They get everything first. They are the reason the library stays open and the ghoulies get fed. We ask that you please consider becoming one of our patrons, so you too can step beyond the cordoned off areas relatively safely. Please visit patreon.com/midnightlibrary. Thank you.